6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I'm Chris Satelliteforce, joined virtually, as always, by the effervescent Anna Forsythe, the Forsythe03. Welcome, Anna.
Hi, Chris. I feel like you've used effervescent before. I feel like...
I probably have. I mean,
I mean it's a good adjective, but yeah. I feel like... Yeah. We have more in the tank.
Really? Okay. I will go to the thesaurus and better prepare myself the next time we.
Thanks. Please do. How are you?
Yeah, you know, I'm keeping it real. I'm not bad. I'm tired. A little worn down. It was a long night last night. Went and saw a movie. Didn't get home until like whatever time it was.
Late nights. Wow. It's almost like pre-pandemic times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
Wild. I mean, anyone who has seen your Twitter, seen the taking its toll, the day has taken its toll on Baby Force and Puppy Force.
It has.
So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Puppy Force, she being a puppy, she did a lot of naps, mm-hmm. whole lot of crazy.
Yeah.
It sort of goes one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Baby Force, she had a heck of a Monday at daycare. So we've all been there.
Yeah.
I mean, daycare.
I presume I have a daycare as well. I mean, we didn't call it that, but whatever.
We've all had a heck of a Monday.
Yeah. I mean, my Monday. Yeah. Less intense than other Mondays, but it was reasonably busy.
Yeah.
As Mondays go, I'm kind of a little bit checked out because I finish this job in 2 weeks. So there's like little bits going on that I care about, but in general, just finishing bits off, you know?
Okay. I see. So kind of like what Matt's approach to the podcast was back in the day.
Oh, yeah. That's it. You. I'm trying to think of a hockey equivalent. Louis, I guess. King Louis, just cashing his paychecks.
Oh, so at what point are you going to be, you know, switching over to the Coyotes podcast? You could probably, you know what? They'd probably give you press credentials to cover them.
Not after the joke I just made on Twitter. So I've made a few enemies in Coyotes territory.
Yeah, I saw that they're offering at least 500 tickets a game for students.
Well, yeah, that'll fill it out a bit.
Oh, gosh. Could you imagine if, like, well, could you imagine in any other state, like even Florida, you know, probably, I mean, who knows, maybe not a good example with the current edition of the Panthers, but, like, that even being a thing. Like, I'm all for you. Providing tickets to students or those who, you know, families or what have you, do that, make them accessible. But that's, I mean, paper the university. That's probably a good way to get fans in the stands. You know,
fill
600 seats you have available.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Canucks could do a way better job of making their tickets more accessible and affordable, but students, et cetera. But yeah. They don't need to is the thing. You do feel like Arizona need to do this.
Yeah. You know, in ticket prices, I mean, any professional sport in North America, ticket prices are ticket prices. But I found it interesting, having purchased a few tickets to go to see the BC Lions play in the summer, we're going to a family day game. They have a promotion where kids get a $10 ticket. That's right. You know, I think that's great. I mean, parents don't get a $10 ticket. We're paying more, but it's still an affordable, mm-hmm. accessible way to watch a Canadian Football League game. But when you're going through the actual price of the ticket on Ticketmaster, because there's no alternative here right. in Canada. If it's not Ticketmaster, it's something owned by Live Nation, who owns Ticketmaster. So
right.
That's it. And the Lions are actually selling you the ticket, not at $10. They're selling you the ticket at like four something, because they're realizing that there is going to be a fee on top of that to be $10. But get right. this. There are also more fees beyond that. There's the convenience fee of buying a ticket through Ticketmaster because it's so convenient that I have no alternative.
Yeah.
There's the facility fee, which, okay, I guess I have to pay for the privilege of being able to watch a game in BC Place where they play and there's no other alternative there. And then there's the service fee.
Yeah. I mean, when you they charge you all these fees and then they don't give you a ticket. It's just like you're bringing your ticket on your phone, aren't you? So,
yeah. Like I remember, you know, and I'm old here, so let's, you know, understand that times were different back then. But while you could go through a service like Ticketmaster, you always had the alternative to buy direct from the box office. Like if I want an Alliance ticket, I could go down to, you know, wherever the BC Lions office was,
right.
and I could buy a ticket from them and I could avoid those fees. Now there's no avoidance because not only can you not go and do that, the box office in the stadium, guess who operates it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's Ticketmaster.
Yeah, they're always lining their pockets somehow. It's dreadful. I mean, just to keep going off the rails as well already, yeah. you know, off the track. So the England cricket team has just started their international summer and there was just huge amounts of empty seats in the last test because Lords were charging like £110 for a day's ticket to the cricket. And yes, you get like a whole day of entertainment and they can't guarantee how many days it'll run because that's cricket. Like it only ended up running 3 days rather than five. So, but that's a risk you take. Whereas Trent Bridge, which is where the test is going on right now, that's in Nottingham. They've just done day four for the last, day five, because they don't sell last day tickets until the game's already started. Mm-hmm. And they're doing them all for free. So you had to sign up, whatever. So they went, 12 hours in advance of it starting, but tickets for free. And then the whole thing sold out. And that's how you get, you know, interest in a sport that's, you know, like hockey's not the biggest sport, right? You've got to generate some interest. So maybe we shouldn't judge Arizona too much.
True. One final note, if you are, as a listener, curious about the experience of buying tickets here in North America, and I mean, to say North America, maybe as a service, because I'm not familiar as to how tickets are handled down in Mexico, but in Canada and the United States, it's Ticketmaster Live Nation. John Oliver he actually has done a couple things, but there was a recent episode, or it might've been last year on Last Week Tonight, where he actually talked about the approach to tickets and ticket sales and how, they also now mix in their resale. So they legitimately charge you fees to buy a ticket. And when you resell through them, they charge you fees to do that. They charge the person buying at the same fees that would already been paid.
Yeah.
But what they do is they mix those tickets in to what you see. And so it's not clear as to whether or not you're buying verified resale or sell. And then on top of that, they hold back, like there's the holdbacks. And then ultimately in the grand scheme of things, there's maybe like,
messed up.
Two tickets available to everyone, and there's, you know, 17,998 that are essentially resold before you could even get into play. Anyhow. What a racket.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's not what we were going to have a show about. That is just me, you know, riffing here. We're actually going to talk about what's going on in the world of the Vancouver Canucks, because, hey, there's stuff happening. It's been a couple of weeks. Some news has come out of what may or may not be happening in the Canucks locker room. And as you aptly put in the rundown, hockey Twitter is as entertaining as ever. So we may or may not get into things as to what's been entertaining on hockey Twitter, depending on where our show is at. But let's start talking about the Canucks. So Patrick Ovechkin's been a pretty busy guy in sort of the past few weeks, huh?
Yeah. I mean, he's getting in touch with his roots, signing all the Swedish players. Yeah. In advance of, you know, free agent frenzy, which is now a month away as we're recording this, he's sort of got to work in Europe. Made a couple signings. For warning, we're going to probably butcher these pronunciations because apparently it's pronounced like more like Oman. But I don't know.
Oman?
Not Oman. Okay. So Nils Oman, Oman, something of that ilk. And was it today, Monday, that Johansson?
Yeah, Filip Johansson, former pick from the, I think it was the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, so read about them both. Like, Nils Oman just seems like a good, you know, flyer signing. Late round pick, didn't quite pan out, but often late round picks don't. So we'll see what happens there with he's I know the kind of interesting thing there is I know he plays center as well as on the wing. I think that's part of the enticing part of him. But also it's kind of interesting because he said since he signed that he would rather stay in Sweden if he's going to play in the AHL, which, I mean, completely get from his perspective. Jim Rutherford's apparently promising all these people the moon. So, you know, when they sign, you know, you've got a spot on the roster, dude. Which, I mean, sure, they're cheaper and probably just as good as some of our bottom six, but unfortunately we still have to pay that bottom six for the moment, so yeah, we'll see on that. Johansson, obviously first round pick, so I think that's safe to say he's a bit of a bust as to at least in Minnesota's eyes. But if you just we didn't pick him in the first round, so I think it's kind of a case of taking him at face value as just a player we have signed, entry level, cheap. Defense. We need defense. Like, let's just see where that goes. He's going to stay in Sweden, so we will see later down the line how that comes. Are you? Can you talk now? Has Puppy Force stopped barking?
Yeah, and that's. I presume it was coming through. This is the problem with Puppy is. She decides that it's time to let everyone in the city of Surrey, where I reside, to know she is displeased, and your listeners get to hear that. The thing that you know, I saw more on Canucks Twitter is like, one, how can you, if whether you're Rutherford or Ovechkin, promise the world and not give it to these players? Is, you know, you get a reputation this way, and I don't think that's the approach. I think it's you have every opportunity to fight for a spot. I don't think they're going in with you're going to get a roster spot. And I also don't have an issue if a player were to go and say, hey, if I don't, if I'm not guaranteed, I'm going to stay here. Because ultimately, at the entry-level deal that they've been signed, you're not really losing a whole lot of money. I think the worry I have is, it's more on the number of contracts you can carry as a pro club. Like, that's maybe where there's some risk.
Yeah, fair enough. And, I mean, I'm looking at Cat Friendly now. I'm just checking. It says 29. I'm trying to see if the new signings are included in that. Doesn't look like it. So, yeah. that's always a concern, but that's kind of why we need to put more energy into shopping some of this dead weight. We're never going to get rid of it all because Jim Benning loved to hand out big contracts. So,
yeah. And we're going to get into, you know, more of that later on.
Yes.
Into the show in our next segment. But the other thing that's sort of coming in to the equation here is how, you know, Rutherford is looking at Abbotsford and it's like, yeah, we want this team to be competitive. We want this team to win. I can't say I ever heard anything about Utica or last year about Abbotsford from the previous regime.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's partly the fact that it was so far away. It's easy to not think about it too much. It really wasn't an accessible resource. Yes, it's like, oh, you can put some players down there and check on them in like a year or two, but, and people will always point to Thatcher Demko developing in Utica, but there hasn't been much else that developed down there. So yeah, I think it's high time that they made use of things. Abbey Canucks in general had a decent first season, but I think one big thing will be goalies next year and what Canucks decide to do with that and where they decide to place their bets in their young goaltenders, because I think we're all kind of in agreement that Spencer Martin's backing up next year, but It's just a case of who is next in line, because is it Mikey DiPietro or like is Seelov's like making a late push? Obviously Seelov's development's not been ideal whatsoever, like with his stints in the ECHL and all kinds of things like that, but yeah, DiPietro is really not developing as quickly as they wanted to either, so that'll be interesting next year, because I think that's really key, the goaltender pipeline, because We have goaltenders galore, but like not a clear third choice.
Mm-hmm. Well,
really,
what would that third choice be? Is the third choice the future for the team, you know, many moons from now, or is it that you have a reliable person who can help your team in Abbey win and when need be number three in Vancouver?
That's a great point. That's something they'll have to decide, because do they, you know, it's almost like they probably, if they need a three in Vancouver, or like Martin gets injured or Demko gets injured and they need a new backup, you almost want to not bring up your starter from Abbey, because you want to, they both have such stunted development. So do they sign another goalie? A veteran goalie who would be, you know, more of a mentor presence like Richard Bachman was in Utica. And
Bachman was often the choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. The call. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that'll be a huge decision to make, because honestly, whoever they pick to really push, I don't think it's necessarily going to be smooth sailing. So you may want to win and they may put in some good efforts, you know, Team Sheldon. They just re-signed Alex Canuck-Leipert, who almost has the word Canuck in his name. That's how away broadcasters like to say it anyway, so it's got to be good. But yeah, you know, if Jack Rathbone makes the jump to the big club, that's going to be another huge loss. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know if it's going to go as well this year in terms of winning. Development, maybe.
I understand the doubt you have, but I'm not necessarily convinced that it'll be difficult. Because if you put enough into the cupboard that you have too much to choose from, that's a good thing. And there's that, to me, is one of the things that the Vancouver Canucks have lacked. Like, depth has been an issue. Mm-hmm. It's been an issue in the big club. It's been an issue in the A. In fact, like during, you know, the pandemic season where they signed a partnership agreement, and I mean,
yeah,
I totally get why Utica went the route they did. Utica wanted to win and maybe the Canucks weren't as keen, but then from a developmental perspective, the Vancouver Canucks, you know, had their prospects getting absolutely no time, and the St. Louis Blues cashing in on that. Right? Like, and yeah. I feel that era is gone. And I mean, that is not all on necessarily the Benning regime, simply because Utica was a whole different beast. Vancouver Canucks own the Abbotsford Canucks, so therefore, you know, that conversation is not even present. But the approach is defined. Like, that was the thing. I think if we think about it, like, what was the approach of the previous regime? I don't know.
And yeah.
I'd like to give the benefit that out there was one. Like, there was a conversation that Chris Gear had sort of got into with, I think it was Beast Mode on Twitter. But it was along the lines of drafting Pettersson and ultimately who contributed the pick. And what Gear was saying is that at the end of the day, yeah, there was probably a conversation about Pettersson, Glass, whomever, lots of people, different voices, emotional at times, but ultimately the person who makes the final decision went up and said, that's who we're picking. And that, you know, comes to the GM, whether or not that was his guy or not, he was convinced. And one of the things that we've seen is that, you know, may not be a priority to that guy, you know, Trader Jim, old Trader Jim. But you know, there, it's just, maybe that's why we don't hear from him. But anyhow, whatever. What we do know is that in the short period of time that Rutherford's been talking about things, and Alvin has, I mean, they're already looking to put, you know, players into the system.
Yeah,
I'm not going to complain about that, especially when it's entry level money.
Oh yeah, and clearly with the Sedins, who are almost definitely being groomed for a, you know, adult Canucks jobs. You know, they're like leading the way with development in Abbey, and they were last season as well. So I think that kind of shows the connection they want to make and make sure it's a symbiotic relationship, you know?
Yeah. Moving past the Canucks, but we'll get back into them a little bit later. You catch any of the conference finals?
So I've seen bits and pieces. The last couple of games, I didn't really see much of that, much of Tampa's fight back. I mean, that's probably reflective of my interest in seeing that narrative play out. It was funny. I actually went to lunch last weekend with a friend of the show, Annalise's parents, and her dad said, Tampa are coming back. You know, they're winning this. And, you know, they were losing 2-0 in the series, 2-0 in the game. And of course, they came back. They won that game. They kept winning. And yeah, of course, they know how to win. They have Vasilevsky. And in the battle of the goalies, he triumphed in the end. So even without Braden Point, New York didn't quite have enough.
No. The Rangers, I mean, they were punching above their weight class, I think,
yeah, the
entire playoff run.
True. They're a bit early in their development.
Really. Right. But I mean, and it's not to take anything away from what they were able to accomplish. They were up, you know, two games to nil, or 2-0, in the conference final. But, you know, Tampa is the sort of veteran team, was able to settle things down. And it's almost like a switch got flipped in game three, where suddenly Tampa had the moxie to, you know, get themselves that win. And I'm not looking at the, you know, game, you know, subsequent, you know, three games and saying, oh, the Rangers had tapped out. They had not. They did everything that they could possibly do. They just couldn't score goals beyond, you know, one per game. Like, even in game six, they did everything they could possibly do to get back into that game and potentially take it to overtime. And then,
yeah, like, you know, the shots on goal were crazy, but
you know, controversially, you know, Tampa wins. Although having watched that, I don't see how it would have been interference. Like I'll admit the NHL, you know, rule book is kind of like interpretive art.
Yeah, especially in the playoffs.
But I don't see how that was interference, that goal. I mean, it's unfortunate that's how what it comes down to, and then by the way, you're out, but
yeah. I mean, I guess it comes down to that because you let a 2-0 series lead slip away. But yeah, there has been no like small amount of controversy this playoff run, and like the fact that there was that offside that wasn't actually offside, but no one actually understands the offside rule. Turns out, like,
well, so I think it's Dave Jackson, former referee, who essentially works with ESPN.
Yeah,
I felt of all the explanations, he approached it well.
That's the one I watched too to get it.
Yeah, he's like, you know, what we're looking at is like bang bang, but in the era of replay, you're given the opportunity to see this. But think of it in terms of, if I throw the puck in all the way to the end boards and the player touches up, that's onside. We would not be having this conversation. Why we're having this conversation is the bang bang nature, but the premise remains the same.
Yeah, yeah. That was a good way to sort of show it.
But I think it does, like, I mean, what he's described it and how he explained it worked well, but I think it actually going to go, like, the NHL is going to go look at this and we're like, oh, we're going to go and change our words. Like, you know, a distinct kicking motion is still a problem.
Did we already talk about this last time about whether it was or not?
We didn't. Okay. We didn't. And
I mean, but I'm of the opinion that it was, but I think it was technically not a goal, but morally should be. So,
well,
yeah, just, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, we don't need to relitigate, but
yeah, I mean, distinct kicking motion is like,
what on earth equivalent does that mean?
To the blue paint.
Yeah,
you know, was your skate in the blue paint? Yeah, the goaltender in the play is on the other side, but oh my god, the toe of your skate, you know, hit the blue paint, and therefore the world ended. Like, I mean, just,
yeah, it's silly.
Avs obviously cruised past the Oilers.
Obviously, I mean, obviously Calgary was such a disappointing show in their series against Edmonton. Compared to the regular season form, but yeah, you had to think that.
I was hoping for 9-6 in that first game.
I mean, I guess it is impressive. What we should be surprised by is how well Francouz has done with his, like, job. Like, we always kind of said,
having to come in, and I mean, he's a 1B.
Yeah.
But
he is 1B for sure, but like Colorado's, their 1A isn't superstar at all. Like, look at, you know, Shesterkin, Vasilevsky, and then you had, yeah, Francouz. So against Connor McDavid, who's arguably the best offensive talent in the league. And if he isn't,
Mike Smith,
he's just, yeah, he wishes. Yeah. Turns out also Mike Smith is still Mike Smith.
Oh, good.
So
he lost the plot. I mean, Colorado still wins the series, but
yeah,
I think they won quicker because game. Mike Smith lost the plot.
Yeah. Hey, and honestly, he's up, been slowly losing it for years.
Yeah. But the Stanley Cup final, I mean, I don't think anyone can say it shouldn't work out to be an entertaining series.
Yeah. Hopefully it will. And maybe this is where the goalies kind of count at last in Colorado. Because they are the best team in the league, you would have to say. But the goalies aren't the same level as Tampa is. So we'll see what happens there. Yeah, they've had a long time to cool off too, so either it's good because they rest up or they completely forget how to play hockey. So I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say they didn't have an overtly tough series against Edmonton, but Oil were doing a little headhunting near the end, so maybe a few extra days to help heal those sore joints is necessary. Anywho, speaking of taking some time off, the podcast is going to take a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast from CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
I mean, we've been talking about JT Miller like all season long, all offseason. Will he be back? Won't he be back? You and I have made our opinions very clear. We feel that he needs to maybe be shopped, if only to free up space in a world that Jim Benning really messed up. However, also understand that there's some extreme value in potentially keeping him, presuming the numbers can be right. And I think that's been made very, very clear from this ownership group that they're taking quite seriously. They want to do a deal. They want to do a deal that makes sense. Now, based on what we're interpreting, is maybe JT going to be somewhere next season?
I mean, obviously, they're saying, they're being careful with what they say, the Canucks. But if you read some of his quotes, I think we all kind of were of the opinion that they were saying, yeah, we'll sign JT. We want to sign JT. Obviously, we want to re-sign JT, but it has to make sense for everyone. And when, Jim Rutherford and Patrick Colville have been quite open as to where the team is at, which is not competing and not really close to it. So,
The thing that really set things ablaze came out of essentially out of Toronto. So for those of you who pay attention to the hockey world, that there are many personalities, but what we presume is an East Coast bias exists. Essentially, if you're a team on the West, the most don't stay up too late to watch your team exist. But John Shannon and Kipper, they were both on the Bob McCown podcast. Bob McCown, he's a sports personality out East. And John Shannon just casually drops the news that Rutherford ain't a big fan of the Vancouver Canucks locker room feeling that it's a country club, and that he'll be making splashes, that only a core of three or four stay. Now, who's the core? I mean, I think, again, we've talked about it on the show. It's very clearly Pettersson, Hughes, Demko. I would say Horvat, but I understand where people would say no, and I'm perfectly fine. Except there are those who'd say JT Miller's your core. Okay, I don't understand where you get that being the core, but okay, whatever. But that all other players are available, and that they are planning on making big changes. Now, fast forward a day or two, and the local media has obviously been spinning this up, but the one who is probably closest to having their fingers on the pulse of the Vancouver Canucks front office in Dhaliwal says, yeah, I can't say I've heard the country club stuff, but I do know that they look at that cap number and feel that it's an anchor they need to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, either way, whether it's true or not, that they sort of think that dressing room is their way to comfy country club, like, you can't ignore the truth of the numbers, which is kind of what Dollywell said, and they're being honest and they're appraising everything, and there's some ugly looking contracts in there. And just to go back to the core pieces thing, I do think they consider Bo a core piece from a leadership perspective, and just from the perspective of not looking like they're in complete panic. They want to keep Bo around. I think we both kind of said we would, if there was an insane offer for Bo, like, we'd be fine to take it. But I have a feeling they want to keep him around, so there's more like a core four. But yeah, I mean, I almost not bothered either way whether they consider it a country club or not.
The country club. So, I mean, the country club comment is simply the prerogative of a front office and a coach. I mean, what one will say is a country club, another will say a professional locker room, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, I don't know whether the Canucks during the Gillis era had a country club atmosphere, but I think it's fair to say that that group of players liked what they had, appreciated what they were doing, and were given the latitude to continue to be themselves. Is it perfectly fine because the team's winning? Maybe, maybe not. Is it a country club? Who knows? I mean, we do know that there were a certain standard and expectation that was set by Sedins, but I think it's fair to say that Bo Horvat comes in with a similar mindset. But then this sort of then speaks to the rumors that is there the possibility that Horvat's not the guy who, you know, has the loudest voice in the room and what have you. I just, you know, take from this, though, is that not so much the country club, it's the 3 to 4 people who are the core and every other piece is available. Because if that were to occur, if the real trader, Jim, in Rutherford, you know, and by extension, Patrick Alvin, make this type of, you know, magic happen over the course of the offseason where they start moving players left, right, and center. I mean, that's the rebuild that should have happened, I said 2 years ago, because, yes, it should have happened much earlier than that. But 2 years ago was when you had the team was in such a great spot. Bad deals were finally coming off the books. Mm-hmm. They had cap flexibility to go and take some of the, you know, contracts off of other teams and paying with some goodies along for the ride. And yet here we are where, you know, apparently the Coyotes are saying, you got some bad deals, we'll take them. Heck, didn't the Sabres just like the Sabres made a deal here where they took a contract to help get themselves to the floor? It's going to be paid for by insurance, granted, but I'm jaded. I just don't know how that even all this all occurs.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. We've talked about it in Discord as requiring some wizardry, because something's going to have to give, right? They can't develop at the rate they want to develop while being weighed down by all these contracts. They can't re-sign Brock and, you know, Bo. And they definitely can't re-sign JT if they want it, if they're keeping everyone. So I think even if you're not re-signing JT, you've still got contracts to shift, and they won't be easy to shift. You'll need some sweeteners. You'll need to give away some stuff you don't want to give away. But it's almost, it's not quite a gift, because Canucks paid for the JT deal. You know, they gave up a first round pick and opportunity cost, whatever, but it's an opportunity.
I mean, they gave up a first round pick to get Garland or OEL or whomever you might want to associate the pick to.
Yeah.
Because what are first round picks?
Yeah, exactly. So that's huge. But yeah, it's like another, you've been given another chance with JT. And he's had a great year, and that's partly due to the Canucks and the players they've surrounded him with, and you could say the coaching, I'm sure that's part of it. So it's just like cash in on that opportunity that you created with the player and set him free. If you love someone, set them free.
So what you're telling me is Rutherford actually loves the room and he plans on setting them all free out of the immense love that he has for everyone, except for three or four players. Doesn't love EP. No, Petey's in the bad books. Bo's in the bad books. Yeah, got it. Got it. I understand what you're saying.
Well,
yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, there's a lot of time between sort of now and the draft. Well, a lot of time, an episode. there's a lot of time between now and free agency, a couple episodes. And there's a lot can happen that probably won't happen until the season itself is over. So I don't know. I don't know if I'd be excited about a rebuild, because I mean, let's be honest, if the Canucks do go through a rebuild and keep the core that they have, this core is not going to be the core that'll come out of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the brutal reality of it, isn't it? That we had this amazing core. We could have blown it up and built a team around them. And now we're struggling to sort of cash in on their prime. I mean, Petey's still young, Quinn's still young. Demko is young for a goalie, so as long as his hips, you know, keep up and he doesn't get completely ridden into the ground, he should still be around. But it's just so frustrating. But we are where we are.
True that. Speaking of other potential deals, the Vancouver Canucks apparently have also made it clear that they're interested in having conversations with teams about draft picks. Now, in the old regime, that would be said, and I think it became interpreted that we are more than willing to give ours away. What do you have available? obviously, the Vancouver Canucks are not necessarily in the most desirable location within the NHL draft. That said, it's not also that entirely hot. So therefore, what you're getting where the Canucks are drafting isn't a whole lot different than what you might be getting a few picks earlier, or potentially you might be a team that says, yeah, we got our eye on a guy, and we're pretty confident that they'll, you know, fall to, I think, what, the Canucks have 15, if memory serves me correct.
Yeah, so Canucks have 15. I mean, you kind of do think it's the case because of, one, how the draft is this year, and two, just how different the draft lists are. I mean, I read a few today, and I was looking for players, you know, that I'd seen in a couple of lists, you know, in the top 5 to 10, and then I was seeing them at the end of the first round in another list, and they'll be like 10 to 15 point place difference between lists. So it's almost a case of just like on the day being really active and being ready you know, say, like, who are you looking at? Who do you, like? Do you think he's available at 15? Because we have guys that we like later. Maybe we can take some picks later down off your hands. I do think it's... I'm really reluctant to put a case together to move up. Mm-hmm. Even despite how bare the prospect cupboard is.
The issue in trading up though is like, what are the Canucks giving up?
Yeah, exactly.
To get there?
What do they have? I mean,
right. Like, you know, immediately the Vancouver Canucks don't have a second round pick to deal, at least in the 2022. So you're now talking about later round picks, how far up you want to go. Draft picks are probably out of the question. In fact, you know, you have to consider your first round pick plus whatever later round picks you might want to trade, then put you in a weird spot because that player you get, you're taking a big risk on. So then, who's on the roster that can help elevate the value?
I mean,
there are players who could probably help you get a first round pick, you know, our pick plus to get yours. but you know, are you as a fan willing to, like, I'll use JT Miller. Could JT Miller get a first round pick? I totally think he could.
Yeah.
I think there's teams out there that'd be willing, maybe even a 1-to-1 deal. Is that value enough? And is that pick going to be high enough?
But, and saying that, like, almost everyone outside the top 4 or 5 is going to be an absolute flyer. Could argue even everyone's of like pretty close to a flyer in this draft, but do you want it? You definitely don't want to give away next year's draft. Like, that's where the good stuff is. Like, it's meant to be a really deep draft. So if we are putting together packages, you know, one of our like roster players plus our pick, I'd say that's to move down, not up. And
yeah,
all the draft picks.
I think, and that to me, that's the route. Like, if the Vancouver Canucks are going to go up, like, there's the mechanism to go up, to me, doesn't get you the same value as the mechanism to, go down. I hate the draft because it's, which direction am I talking about? A lower draft pick doesn't provide you the same value as taking your current pick and possibly going a little bit later, especially considering you don't have a second round pick, and use that as a weapon to help maybe facilitate some room on your roster or whatever it might be. I would think most of our listeners have either heard of the trades that allowed Brian Burke to get the picks necessary to draft the Sedins.
Right.
But, you know, the Vancouver Canucks were sitting in a more desirable position in that draft year. You know, the Vancouver Canucks could have picked a Sedin with their third overall, but ultimately, you know, Brian Burke was able to go and finagle two picks to make that happen. And really the piece of the puzzle that helped it was Brian McCabe, who, yeah, at the time, a decent enough hockey player, but that's what allowed for him to then in turn, you know, get picks. And those picks turned into the Vancouver Canucks eventually having 2 and 3.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's possible to finagle, right? Even in this day and age, and it's just finagling in a different way. Because even if you're thinking about moving down, right? Some of the people that you might be looking at, if you keep the original pick at 15, you know, I know Owen Pickering, I think, is quite high on the list, and he's a center and center depth. But I've also seen him in the bottom of the first round in lists. Snuggerund, however you say that, I've seen him at 15. I've seen him at like mid-30s. So there really isn't a consensus at all. You know, Ty Nelson, I've seen him like, the same thing. Like, I've seen him in the like bottom of the first round or second round, mid round. So there's no consensus whatsoever. So it really depends on who the Canucks are looking at, and maybe more importantly, who other teams are looking at and who they are keen on.
Yeah. As to sort of positional depth, this brings me to Cam Robinson, friend of the show, Cam, who he'll often say, it's BPA, best player available. Yeah, that might be position, but you go with best player available, whomever it happens to be. He was just today, going through his list, and he shared this on Twitter. I've reached the stage of the draft season where I can no longer discern one tab from the next. It's overwhelming and beautiful all at once. And it's got me thinking, how deep was he in the draft that it got to the point the tabs started to blur? Like, was that still in the first round?
I will say that that's usually the time I hate multiple tabs being open, but that's also the draft is usually where I end up very deep in tabs because you're looking at like 20 different players and not just like one tab for every player, but like one outlet's opinion of this player, video of this player, another outlet's opinion of this player. So yeah, and I've got like the paper magazines this time around, so just taking out more tabs in my mind. And yeah. I'm going nowhere near in depth as anyone seriously writing about these guys. So,
well, I mean, like in Cam in particular, if there, I know there's a lot of people out there that do this. Obviously, Cam holds a special place in our heart, being a friend of the show and all. But like when I see him talk about Philip Johansson and saying, he's okay with it. He's like, it's a free dart. Vancouver needs free darts. I like it. So seeing him say that, that bodes well. But what's interesting about Johansson is that he says, for what it's worth, I rank Johansson, Johansson 56th overall on his final board, which is interesting because went considerably higher than that.
Yeah. I mean, it was considered a reach at the time, so seems like it's come out that way. But again, as you say, free hit, like, let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just looked at another list that had Logan Cooley above Shane Wright, which is I haven't seen on any other list. So daily face off, you crazy. Yeah. But I've seen him rising massively, so we thought that we had that one thing, right? The consensus number one pick. Everything else is crazy, but maybe not even that.
Yeah. I'm of the thought that a lot of times, even with the consensus, it's the math will always add up a little bit differently based on what is it that you're looking at and what do you value most, right? And there are some out there that will value, let's say, you know, skating over, you know, smarts and positional play, or I mean, it could be something as silly as, are you a left hand or right hand shot? And if that's a little bit out of the ordinary, there can be a detriment or a plus. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
in the grand scheme of things, is any first overall pick a sure thing? Generationally, maybe, but not each and every draft.
No, I agree. I think Shane Wright will probably end up going first. But, yeah, it's definitely not a sure thing. But, yeah, I read an interesting article comparing Nemec to Jimenek. Is that how you say it? I don't know. Juracek. Let's go with that.
I don't.
Let's go with Juracek. And, like, my heart would go to, like, a player like Nemec, who's much more, you know, of a puck retrieval defenseman and of a like less of a checking game, you know, can take things out of the zone rather than pass first out of the zone. Like, but Juracek's like smart physical player, and I'm just like, ugh. It really depends what you value. It's exactly what you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of sure things, if there is a sure thing in hockey, is that hockey players looking for action find action.
Oh, wow.
Interpret that as you see fit.
Yeah.
But I think that's a fair thing to say.
Yeah. And I think it is also just a good bit of advice is always have like an overnight bag packed just in case.
How many overnight bags is appropriate?
I mean, just carry clean underwear, I'd say. But, okay. You know, and also be prepared in case you can't get into your house all of a sudden.
It's you know, without, you know, getting into the specifics here, I log on to, you know, Twitter. My phone was on Do Not Disturb when I'm in the movie. And I'm trying to make sense of what's showing up in my timeline.
I know, because you go on the trending topic and it's just people making jokes about the thing that you don't know what the thing is.
Exactly. Right. And like, and then it's like the, oh, wow, I've been off Twitter. What's new? Or the hello, good morning. Did I miss anything? Like, you know, it's like, okay, cool, thanks. I'm on the outside. I'm like, maybe like you, and you're doing it the funny way. But the thing that I take from this is that it's not new. It is going to be a thing that exists in life. Professional sport, sure, it's sort of what we see and we consume. But all that really matters to me is that was what was happening between consenting adults okay, and an understanding that, yes, there are bigger things at play between adults, but what business is it of mine?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy the fact that we have to have that as a bar. But as we've talked about, and the story continues to rumble on, that's not always the case. So consenting adults, low bar, maybe hold out for enthusiasm. But yes, like, it's not really our business. It's kind of funny, but it's also sad. So, you know, it's more just like, definitely, let's say it's lapses of judgment occurred.
Well, I mean, having seen a little bit of the video, mm-hmm. That lapse of judgment may have also been enhanced by the consumption of enhancers.
Enhancers, yeah. That's the best way to put it. But yeah, if you live in a hockey town and maybe hockey isn't the biggest sport in the whole of North America, but certainly the biggest in Canada, and if you're a star in that sport, you're going to get caught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just the reality.
It is. And I think, you know, for me, it's just like the fact, like I get why it's an issue, but why is it an issue? I'd rather see all this attention, you know, spent trying to, you know, get the truth out of Hockey Canada and what they knew.
Yeah. I mean,
right.
There's a reason that, like, the trending topics are what they were, and how many of those people that were tweeting about the video have tweeted about Hockey Canada?
Yeah, and you know, and for those that don't know, it is nothing to do with a player. Well, maybe it does have stuff to do with players out of Edmonton, but not the particular player out of Edmonton who we are referring to. I mean, whatever. It's Connor McDavid.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's,
I guess I shouldn't dance around this.
Yeah, everyone knows what it is. Everyone knows what we're referring to. Connor McDavid got caught in video with someone that was not his girlfriend.
Yeah, whereas, you know, Hockey Canada may or may not have been aware of, I'm saying may or may not have been aware, but they were aware.
What amounts to a woman being raped and by players at World Juniors, and in a very, like, and the cover-up from start to finish seems to be very vindictive, so Hockey Canada are being called to account by, is it Parliamentary Committee? What's the name of
it? It is.
Yeah. But
I mean, it's, you know, it's like in the United States, if baseball messes around, Congress gets involved. In Canada, if hockey messes around, Parliament gets involved.
Yeah. I mean, cricket has been, I've mentioned this before, I think, but cricket, like Yorkshire County Cricket Club got called to a parliamentary subcommittee for their dealing of with a racism scandal, so it's kind of embarrassing for them, for Hockey Canada, but really it's a bit pathetic the way they've dealt with this and so many other culture issues that have come up. But you've got to hope that this changes something, but
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold my breath.
Neither, but we continue to hope and talk about it and be aware. Yeah.
The fact remains, though, there are things that need to change, and we'll continue talking about them on the show. If for some reason you're not happy about that, many apologies. It's not going to change. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I would say you could, if you want, express those feelings by calling or texting the C4 text 9. But guess what? That 604-200-6201 is not ours anymore.
You should have mentioned it.
Well, I did. It's not ours. That phone number's gone. We lost it. But get this, Anna. I don't know if the new one that I got for us is ours anymore either.
So what we're saying is SpeakPipe still a thing? Is that still an available avenue?
That is still a thing. Always available. SpeakPipe.com/C4podcast. That's a way to get in touch with us right now.
I mean,
now.
I think that's probably good because that's everyone can access that. So that's a good one to put out there. And then obviously discord.io/C4podcast.
That's right.
Where we have these silly discussions and serious discussions. We have both. So hop on.
I mean, the silly ones are often based on movies, food, or pop culture. The serious ones always seem to be about hockey.
Yeah. We have very dumb arguments about food on Discord. And, you know, this is how we learn about Chris's poor cinema etiquette.
Okay. Honestly, do you think I would be the one who would be talking?
I don't know.
Consider. Okay. So we went for a beverage before we went to see the movie. And my brother's making fun of me that when I was a referee in soccer, that I was known as Chris Justice. And so both Jay and my brother like hear that. And they're like, hey, Chris, totally Chris Justice. So is the guy who is, you know, always following the rules, the one who's going to be talking in a theater?
No, I bet you're the person that shushes people.
Oh, gosh, I was shushing Jay and my brother.
You should have bought your cards, give them a yellow card, put their name in.
If I knew where they were, maybe next movie I go to. Oh, but yeah, we'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. And the other thing that I totally messed up last episode was what our schedule will look like, because it did not occur to me that because the season went a little bit longer than we've, you know, normally had become accustomed to, that free agency does not start on July 1st, as it sort of always has.
Yes, which I only realized after the fact, too, and then we both forgot to alter the schedule, so...
Yeah, but free agency kicks in on July. I think it's July 13th.
Yes, so a month from when we're
which is a Wednesday, which is also awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess it's not a holiday like July 1st free agent frenzy holiday. Yeah, I always had it off, but I was never watching it nonstop, consuming it. But as far as our schedule is concerned, we've sort of been doing in the off season every couple of weeks ish. We'll be back again when we record next in 2 weeks-ish time.
Yeah.
And then we'll be back again.
Post-draft.
I think 2 weeks after that, right?
Yeah.
Where it gets funny is free agency.
Yes, because that kind of throws a spanner in the works when we're looking at... Yeah.
And you obviously.
And me obviously going away.
Gallivanting off to 4 weddings, 5 weddings, 6 weddings, whatever it is.
And a funeral. No, there's no funeral.
Are you going to? I was going to say, I'm sorry. I feel like
a jerk. No, but I did go to a funeral last time I was home. There were literally 2 funerals on my street in the 10 days I was home. I used to live on a very, you know, distinguished, gentrified, I don't know what the word is. People on my street were old.
Cycle of life type thing.
We should be recording right after the draft and then around free agency, but yeah, we will have to update you. Probably we will sort it out, so we'll update you for sure next episode.
Yes, we will. But as we already mentioned, you can find us online, C4 Discord, Discord.org, also C4 Podcast, speakpipe.com/C4Podcast, and as always, C4Podcast.com. So on behalf of Anna Forsythe, A4SA03, myself, Chris, at Light Force, signing off this episode with We Out.